This week, Jill thought she'd found the perfect man. He was good-looking, had a great laugh, and most importantly, his desire to serve God met the standard she'd set for her future husband. But over time, Jill realized that she'd married a selfish, self-righteous, and faithless narcissist. Trust me, you don't want to miss a single minute of this week's show, especially the incredible twist at the end. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
I'm a failure as a husband. I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Welcome to My Crazy Divorce, everyone. I'm your host, Tom Milligan. Like every show we do, this week's show includes lying, cheating, deceit, you name it. But I have never heard such blatant gaslighting as I heard in this interview. And the false spirituality, don't even get me started. But before I get to the story, I gotta give a quick shout out to our sponsor, OurDivorce.com. Visit OurDivorce.com if you're considering divorce and think you and your spouse can both be reasonable. Their simple three-step process is specially designed to help amicably divorcing couples through the divorce process. Again, that's ourdivorce.com. And if you didn't have an amicable divorce and you'd like to share your crazy story on our show, please visit mycrazydivorce.com and apply to be a guest. I'd love to hear from you. As always, if you need legal advice, please contact a licensed attorney. With all that out of the way, let's talk about Jill. Jill is the youngest of four kids. She has two older brothers and a twin sister, Jennifer, who plays a huge role in today's story. In just the few weeks since I met her on TikTok, Jill has already become a close friend. And as she tells her story on today's show, I'm sure you'll feel just how genuine she really is. I'm honored to be her friend and very grateful that she was willing to share her story. I hope you enjoy it. Obviously, I've heard some of your story leading up to this, but I'm looking forward to hearing more detail. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Let's talk about religion. Let's talk about your religion. So tell me about your family's religion. Did you guys grow up religious or were you more of a, you know, secular family?
Definitely grew up religious. You know, that term I really don't like. I never thought about us being religious. I thought about us just going to church. My parents, partied a lot before Jen and I were born, and 3 months before we were born, they went to church and loved God. And so Jen and I had a very different life than my two brothers, at least the first 4 years of my brother's life and the 8 years of Darren's. So our first years were in church. I didn't know any different and I loved it. But yes, definitely we grew up in church and my parents did the best that they could with what they knew.
Tell me about your social life in high school.
Some people say that if you have a really good relationship with your father, then as a girl, you're not very needy. I would say, and I don't know how true that is, but I would say that I was not at all needy for a boy's attention. I was busy. So I would date a boy for 2 weeks and be like, oh gosh, I got to go hold his hand and I'm going to miss out with my friends. This is boring. And this is a funny story. This is so stupid. I don't even know why I'm going to tell you this, but in high school, when I would date a guy, I knew it was time to break up with him. When I went to turn the shower on, I would turn the shower on and go, oh, either I was excited to see him or I wasn't excited. And if I wasn't excited, I knew it was time to break up. And that is so weird. I know, but I'm like, oh gosh, oh no. I've got to talk to him and hold his hand. You know, I was just, Jen and I were busy. I was busy in high school, very, very social, and loved sports. And that was what I did. So, not a whole lot of dating. And I was not the kind of girl that did anything with guys. I you know, grew up in a very, very churched home where everyone was like, save yourself a marriage, save yourself a marriage, save yourself a marriage. I mean, and that was drilled into me. And so I'm sure that was in the back of my mind the entire time. So, you know, that was, I'm sure a lot of, had a lot to do with it. I had excellent parents, parents that loved me. And so I just didn't have the need. I didn't need a boy.
Yeah.
You know, like to have him around once in a while, you know, kiss on him a little bit.
Yeah, that's what they're good for. Let's switch gears. We're going to talk about your ex. His name is Jason. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about where he grew up. Tell me what you know, at least, kind of about his childhood and, you know, how did it differ? How was it the same?
I don't think there was a whole lot of similarities with his. He's an only child. His mother got pregnant out of wedlock with him. And so his mother met him, his father in East Texas, and his dad was going to go to college for football, for kicking. And he got her pregnant. And so his dad kind of was not the best about the ladies. So basically he was told he needed to marry her. And so they married and he didn't finish school. He left because he was chasing the gals while he had a girl pregnant. And so he married her. So their marriage lasted 9 years. Mm. And Jason ended up living with his mother. And so he had a broken home for sure. Watched his dad cheat on his mom and blame him for everything.
So was his dad around?
Not really, just mainly for sporting events. When he played football, he'd show up and always made sure to tell his mother that he was paying child support. Like he thought that was the way to be a good father, was to pay child support. And but other than that, no, he was not around at all.
Do you know, did he date a lot in high school? What yes. Was his, okay, so he was even with his sports, he didn't have the same, I don't need a girl.
Not at all. He dated a lot, slept around a lot, and had girlfriends and, you know, all that comes with all that, so.
Okay. Bring us to that part of the story where you met.
Well, you know, being from Oregon, I had a friend that knew about this very charismatic Bible college in Dallas, Texas. And I waited a semester. So I could have started in August, but I waited a semester and started in January. And my sister did too. We actually went together because we do everything together. So he got there a semester before me. So we got there and I remember sitting, I hadn't met him and I was really scoping out to see if there were any cute men there. And I remember sitting in the big auditorium and I heard this guy laugh and I was like, who is that? And I turned around and I was like, okay, he's hot. That guy is a looker, you know? And so, we started a friendship finally, and we were friends, but we got along really, really well. I mean, you know, he's all Mr. Prayer Pants and going to bed at 9 and getting up at 5. And, I'm crazy. And I remember there was this one time where we all went out as a group and I remember wearing these pants that were Levi's and they had holes everywhere. They might have had a hole in the crotch, but I patched them up. Right.
Yeah.
And this was one of those things where I look back and I think, that should have been a red flag. He had a real problem with me wearing that. So much so that everybody had gone into this one area of this building and he sat down with me in the auditorium and said, I could not go up there because my jeans were so inappropriate. It was what somebody normally would wear. You know, he said it was just tight. And yeah, so, and I guess I should have seen the red flags back then, but I didn't. You know,
we all go colorblind for red.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good saying. I never thought about that.
How long did you date before you got engaged?
Probably 6 months to a year. I mean, because we knew each other. And right. Then he said, then he told me the next person that I date, I want to marry. Well,
whoa.
Yeah. He goes, the next woman that I date, I want to marry. And I was like, ooh.
Okay. Yeah, no pressure.
Okay. You know, and you know, it's one of those things where I just thought, okay, if that's me, it's me, you know, and I just didn't think real heavy about it. So December of that following year, he came and met my dad. I believe it was that December, and asked my dad.
So basically 11 months or so after you met him the first time.
Yeah. If he could marry me. And so we were supposed to marry in the spring, and he called me up while we were at school, because I was about to graduate in December. And he goes, why are we waiting? I said, because I don't want to get married the day after I graduate. He's like, let's just get married. I don't see why we're waiting. So, of course, I'm like, okay. I'm like, okay, fine. You know, I wasn't one of those women that planned this large wedding and had all these dreams of my dress and all that. I was like, okay, I'll rent my dress. We're good. So we had a beautiful wedding, but there are some things before that that we should probably discuss.
Oh, let's hear them.
Well, you know, and we talk about red flags, and I didn't think of any of these red flags, you know. Well, one of the things that he said that he always wanted to go to the mission field, and I'm like, okay, okay, I can do that. And I didn't think that it was a make it or break it kind of a deal, but I was fine to go to the mission field, never been out of the country, but you know, I just thought I could do it. So then this is after he proposed, we were sitting in the car, and he hands me these pieces of paper. And I'm like, what's this? You know, this is for the internet, right? And it was a copy of, a paper. He says, I need you to read this. And if you do not agree with this, then we're going to have to rethink getting married. And I'm like, what is this?
Wow.
And it was on whether or not I would be taking birth control. He says, because there's like a 99.99% chance that you're safe, but that tiny percentage might abort a baby. So we can't do that. He says, and if you don't agree with me on this, then we'll have to rethink whether or not we're going to get married. Had I really valued my opinion and valued myself more, I probably would have said, see ya.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But because I put him so high on this pedestal of this amazing, godly man, I just would let him do and lead, and I just follow and not think that maybe I have thoughts and opinions, and he could sway me like that. He could sway my opinion and make it change whatever I would think. Like, he has such a way with words.
Wow. That is, wow. Okay. So it's almost like I don't want to say a contract, but almost a contract says, if you ever think for your rest of your life that you would ever want to take birth control, we're breaking up.
Or if I ever think, holy crap, the mission field, really, we have little children, that scares me. I'm not saying no, I'm just scared. I mean, if I ever brought that up, then look, I've crushed your dreams. I've broken your dreams. It was never really about my dreams. It was always about his, what he wanted to do with his life.
So you're married. Mm-hmm. Did you go overseas?
No.
Never happened.
We moved out to Oregon. My parents drove all the way from Oregon, hooked up our car, and we took very small belongings of what we had. And Riley, our firstborn child, she was probably about 15 months. And because, you know.
So you were 6 months pregnant?
So 4 months after we got married, Jill got pregnant.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, anyways, I had Riley in Dallas, and then we moved out to Oregon. And thank the Lord, I was with my family for 8 years before we moved back to Texas, but that was moved back with four kids. I had four of my kids, four out of the five at home. His idea.
Oh, yeah.
His idea, not mine. But I am very natural, but it was definitely his idea. In between having these kids, there were a lot of tears with me because I just felt like all of a sudden I'm thrown into motherhood, and here I am feeling like a child when I got to college. I'm a mom, and am I just going to end up having 15 kids? I mean, right. I was so stressed out that for a very, very short time, he allowed me to go on birth control. And so,
whoa.
Yeah. So for a short time that happened, but then, there was some, repentance because of going on birth control and all that. So, cause it, you know, we could have aborted a baby, right? So then I had to repent, for all that, you know. So then, you know, that's in the back of my mind.
So you had to repent. He made you repent for a sin that you might have committed.
I wouldn't say he made me, but it was definitely suggested that we need to do some prayers.
Wow.
You know, on one hand, I say, thank God I was easygoing, but on the other hand, I wish I wasn't. I wish I was one of those that were saying, mother effer,
mm-hmm.
you know, just, yeah, I wasn't ever allowed to call him anything. Like, I couldn't say you're a jerk. I had to say you're being a jerk. Because, you know, he hated when I would call him a name if we argued. So I could see your eyes, you're thinking through this going, what the heck? I see your eyes kind of moving. You're like, oh.
I it's just so strange because my ex accused me of being controlling because in order to stay married to each other, I said, you're going to have to stop seeing your boyfriend. And she said, you're so controlling.
Oh, well, you know.
And I'm going, and now I'm listening to you going, you have to repent because of this. I won't marry you unless you do this. You know, all of these things. And I'm going, anybody who thinks I'm controlling needs to meet Jason.
Yeah. Yeah. and in between that, let's talk about the mission field, because, you know, all his life, that's all he wanted to do. I did never told him didn't put my foot down because, you know, again, never did that. I would say my words to him were, I'm scared. I don't know if I can do it. So he tells everyone I crushed his dreams, but never once did he say, oh, what's Jill's dreams? It was never, let's dream together. It was your dreams. He never asked, what was my dream? It was never, Jill, what did God make you for? What did he make me for? Well, in my mind, it was to be a wife and just shoot out babies, I guess.
Let's talk about that arc of the marriage, right? So you got married. Most people, when you're married, there's like an arc. It starts out one way and it gets really good and then it goes bad.
Well, I would say once we moved to Oregon, it was the happiest time of my life. My sister lived not far and we had little babies. And regardless of Jason working for somebody, working for publishing companies, and then leaving and starting his own business, I didn't care. I mean, I had little kids and Jen and I were hanging out and we did a lot together. And Jason would go off and fish and fly fish and all that. So all that mattered was that I had my family. And I mean, I have the fondest memories in Oregon. And I remember Jason saying, you know, this isn't going to last. You know, eventually our families are going to disagree with the way we raise our kids versus them. And it's going to get really bad. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, it's going to be terrible.
No.
One thing about Jason is his business practices, as I go along in this process, I've learned more and more that they were less than honorable. He started his own publishing company, and we were doing so well that his mother and her husband that she had met at the church that we left
in Dallas,
moved out to Oregon and helped us.
Oh,
and
wow.
He hired her, and we actually found a home in Bend that had a split level to where they had the suite. There was a suite upstairs. And for me, what a fun, sweet time, because I get along with my mother-in-law. I love her. She's one of my best friends, you know? And the only time we ever had issue was if Jason had issue. Her and I got along. He always had issue with her. I never did. I love seeing her, and I still do to this day. There was a disagreement eventually when they moved back to Texas. Well, the business practices and the dishonesty of how much money we had and whose money he used, I would say he was very dishonorable. I don't know a whole lot of it. I've just been told. I just know he owes a lot of people some money.
Still.
So, yeah. Yeah. And so we moved to a small town. We did move, and he said, oh, we can move the business. And it was a really sad thing to leave my family.
Yeah.
It was achingly sad. Later, I found out that through my brother-in-law that there were men looking for him because he owed them money. And I did not know this. I didn't know any of this. That span of living, we moved in 2005, were probably the hardest years of my entire life.
And why?
Well, we moved there and we had four kids, and Jensen, our youngest, was not born yet. At that point, we became Presbyterian, and there are a lot of lovely people in the Presbyterian church, but you know, that saying at East Texas, some of the women are very, very judgmental. So we bought a home, and oh, it was terrible. He bought the home. He flew to Texas. Okay. This is when we were in Oregon, bought the home without me. I just said, you know, he told me I would like it, and I hated it. He's like, we got a really good deal on this. And I was like, how am I supposed to redo a home with four children? And Ella was 2.5. I mean, Riley was 8. And wow. Homeschool, by the way. And I have to homeschool. So.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Mm-hmm. Have to homeschool. Is that your choice?
No.
That was Jason's choice.
Absolutely.
What was the thinking?
That public school will give them an ungodly perspective on life. You know, all the stuff that goes with public school but it just was not even an option. When we got there in 05, he had the business, and it started doing really, really poorly there. Maybe he really burned a lot of bridges with those people. So he had to start fresh. I didn't know this. So we start going downhill fast. I mean, as far as not being able to pay the house bill, we had just bought a nice Suburban.
So here's what I'm gathering so far. Jason is a controlling, manipulative, misogynistic, narcissistic, apparently dishonest business person who, in my personal opinion, with what little I know, so I know I'm saying this probably out of turn, but it almost feels like his piousness, I don't know if that's the right adjective, but his like outward godliness to the world to disguise his basically shittiness as a human being.
I think you really nailed that, didn't you? Yeah. And I really put him up on a pedestal big time.
We need to start talking about his first affair at some point. So,
yeah. And that's what I was about to do. Okay. I was about to just say, okay, from 2005 to 2010, in this East Texas town is where it gets really dark for me. It was getting really, really bad with the business. He wasn't paying the house note. they came and got our Suburban and hauled it off. And that was really hard for me. Instead of going to Jason and crying in his arms, I went to the shower and cried by myself. Mm-hmm. And
so you went and cried in the shower, though, because you didn't want to make him feel bad, or you were trying to protect him? I mean, why didn't you go to him?
Yeah, probably because I didn't want him to see how upset I was about it. You know, and then losing the house was really, really tough. In the church, I had a really good friend. She would come over to my house and hang out with me, and I just loved her. Just sassy. Her name was Melissa. We had gone to church, and it was probably about 10 o'clock. We get this call, and I just see Jason's face just kind of drop. He's like, wait, what? Is she dead? And I was like, what's going on? What's going on? They said, they don't know. They don't know. So that night, her husband, she was in the kitchen. The girls had gone to bed. She had just gotten off a nursing shift. And through that same kitchen window that I stood the night before, her husband came, and she was standing right where I was, and shot her through the neck and through the other side. And she dropped down and instantly was killed. So that was 2009. She was murdered. A year later, exactly a year later, I had gone to Oregon. It was in August. And we went, and something was off. Something was off, and I could feel it. And I remember I remember calling him on the phone. I remember talking to him, and something was off, and it was 4 a.m. talking to him. I couldn't sleep. And my dad knocks on the door, and I'm crying. And he just sits on the end of the bed with me and prays with me. He doesn't know what's going on. And he's just, you know, sweet man, just is there for me. And says, we're there for you, whatever's going on. And I gathered those kids up, not knowing what was wrong. Jason's, he's just like, you need to get home. You just need to get home. So I, at this point, let me back up. He lost the business. We lost a home. We lost a car. I lost a friend. And so he worked at a car dealership selling cars. We went from making a lot of money to barely making any money. So we got home. It was the evening time. And all of a sudden, so the kids are in the house. It's evening. And he says, we need to talk. So we go outside. He gives me the story of our life, the story of our life. And the story goes, basically, it was, I crushed his dreams. I did this. I, and you know, I wanted to be a missionary. And you know, I didn't want to move. You know, I didn't do this. And he turns and looks at me and goes, and that's why I had an affair. And
that's how you found out that he had an affair?
Yeah. And that's why I had an affair.
Oh my gosh.
And when you don't check a phone, when you don't suspect that somebody that you've put on such a pedestal could do this to you, literally a shock of what? That literally I looked at him and I said, no, 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 no. What? I took off running. I just ran. And I turned around and I leaned over and I said, fuck you. And I kept running. And it was evening. And I finally walked back. And I think at that point, he actually had called Charlie, my brother-in-law. And he
says, up in Oregon.
Yeah. And Charlie says, whatever you do, you better make it right. He decided to work it out with me. He says, do you want to leave me? He says, do you love me? And I don't think I was very honest with him, probably because the reason I wanted to stay was because one, church teaches you to whatever the cost, except for, you know, of course, if you're cheated on, you can leave. But I knew I had 5 kids. And I thought, no, I love you and I love our children. And more than anything, I thought about the devastation of my children, the devastation of what this would do to our family. See, through this entire process of being married for 26 years, I did not put me as a priority. And he would argue and he'd say that, oh, you were always selfish.
Oh my gosh.
But in my mind, it was my children. It was my children. And I thought, I'm doing this for my kids.
So he pulls you outside and says, you're a horrible person. You crushed my dreams. You did this, you, and that's why I cheated on you.
Mm-hmm.
Did he elaborate? I mean, I know you ran away, but when you got back, did you, at what point did you find out? How long did it last? Who was it with? Was he, did it, who broke it off? You know, let's get some of that real out of the
how long did it last? According to him, it was only 2 months. It was a lady at work who was in the financials. And basically, she wanted him to leave me. Now, I think of a woman that says, please leave your 5 children and a wife of, at that point, 15 years, is a very selfish person. Two very selfish people to ask that of a man who's married. She was a single mom. And so he had told her he was going to leave me. Well, because of my reaction and what I had said, that I didn't want to leave him, he knew he was going to have to work it out. And that's what we did. But working it out with your wife means you probably should have gone to counseling, but he told me we didn't need it. And I felt so alone. I was so alone that I would go to church and no one would ask me how I'm doing. Even the ones that knew. We left that church because, you know, everybody else was wrong and he was right. And we went to this other church, and I would walk around and look at women and think, I wonder if they've been cheated on. I wonder if I could talk to them and just wish that I could talk to somebody about this deep pain that I had. And I just ended up doing a lot of soul searching and a lot of prayer and felt very alone for a long time. So we left that church. He took the kids out of school and encouraged me to, and told me I needed to homeschool and said, and encouraged me, you can do it. So after he cheated on me and I'm trying to recover from my friend being murdered, losing everything, being cheated on, and not having any counseling, now I'm told I have to homeschool 5 children. And that was like all that together was like the darkest times of my life, you know?
Again, experience is totally different, but so intertwined as well, because when my ex Trinity, when she cheated on me, she said, don't tell anybody. And, you know, I wanted to call my brother.
Yeah.
And he's my best friend. He's always been my best friend. And he's the guy that I wanted to, you know, confide in and talk to. And I needed a shoulder to cry on. And she said, oh, don't tell Dave. He'll hate me. And like idiot, I didn't.
See, my sister knew. Jen knew. And she hated him. My family never liked him. Never liked him.
And you knew that from day one? Were they better about hiding it?
They were better about hiding it. Not from day one. I always felt like I got to make everybody happy around him. You know, I was always on edge a little bit. And he was the one. It wasn't our own children that caused the division of differences. It was him that caused the differences with division.
Of course.
It was not ever our children. Our children are dear friends.
I'm going to put air quotes around this. You're recovering from the affair.
Yeah.
And by recovering, I mean, you're learning to sweep it under the rug. You're learning to learning to be alone and not have any support.
Right. Think about the dump. Think about the dump and how when you look at a dump, you realize it makes mountains. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's like in Texas, you know, they sweep it and it gets deeper in it and the grass grows, but there's still trash. There's still crap and trash underneath. That was what I did. I mean, it was like all this was just swept under and it just looked like, you know, hey, it's a pretty mountain of a family. But no, there's a lot of crap under there that nobody knew about.
Yeah.
And that's what our marriage was built on.
Oh, God, it just, just pains me to hear about it. Cause again, I lived it. And so I get a little bit about it, but I read right after, and literally the day after I found out about her affair, literally less than, I mean, it was probably what, 18 hours after I found out about her affair, I was sitting in a waiting room to see a therapist, a counselor, a marriage counselor. And I was, while I was waiting, I was reading, I found some site, a guy wrote a book called Surviving Her Affair. Because there are a lot of books out there about how to survive his affair.
Sure.
Not a lot about surviving her affair.
No.
And so I'm reading this guy's book. I bought it while I was sitting there in this lobby. And I remember reading, and it's changed my life. I use it a lot. He said, something like this never hurts any less. It just hurts less often. Because you learn to move about your life. That never goes away. Like you say, it's always under that grass. The garbage is always there, but you learn to ignore it. You learn to think about other things. And you know, right. Maybe you, at first you go an hour without thinking about it. Then it's a day, right. Then it's a week, and then,
right.
And it's awful.
Yeah. And he let me check his phone and you know, so of course we left that Presbyterian church. They're the only ones that knew what happened to me. So we go to a new church. Well, then he's not happy with this new church because it's non-denominational. And oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm non-denominational. We met some really, really good friends from that church. Well, he started studying church history. He got into, and I will say that this is probably my favorite church that I've been to, is he got into Eastern Orthodox Church. And I didn't want to go to this Eastern Orthodox Church because it was an hour and a half drive one way. And I liked my church and I had new friends at this new church. He says, well, I'm going to go. You can stay if you want, but I'm going. So I had a choice to make. I was like, well, how am I supposed to get to church? So I headed an hour and a half with him. And he actually, from then on, I hadn't been back to visit in Oregon for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
After he did that, because I was so afraid to leave because he would do it again. So when I did start going back, I would send my youngest would go with me and my two oldest, and they had no clue. I did not tell my children. I would keep them with their father so that it would keep him honest.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew it. He got tired of it, but whatever.
You needed a babysitter. At least you felt that he did.
At least for my own, I could actually enjoy myself without wondering what the heck. He got a job at a pet food place, and he would sell pet food. He ran a company for this overseas business that bought and sold pet food overseas. And so he worked for Koreans. It was weird how it happened.
Yeah.
So he traveled and whatnot, and he made pretty good money. He had gotten this job right before he had this affair. In my mind, she knew he had a good, making good money. And, you know, it was my fault anyways. He was going to do it anyways, whatever. So he had this really good job. Well, then he started traveling an hour and a half to church one way to Tyler, Texas. And so eventually he tells me, we're going to move to Tyler. I'm like, do you have a job? No, I'll start a business. I said, you cannot start a business unless you have a job. I mean, you can, how are we going to do that? We have 5 kids. You just don't believe in me. It's this and that. And I'm like, oh my gosh. He comes down one day from work, because we actually rented a home right below the office that he had the affair in, by the way.
He had the affair in the office?
Yeah.
And you lived right next
door. In the back
door.
Room. Yeah, imagine that. Wow. I hated going up to that office. So he would come down the stairs. So he came down the stairs one day and he said, I put in my 2 weeks. This was a career job. This was a career job. I said, you did what? This time I'm not working. I'm homeschooling because I have to. I'm not working. I was so mad. So I was trying to homeschool my 16-year-old son, whom he took and had him help him with his business and do school on the side. And I don't even know how Ethan even did school on the side. I did my best, but they would go to Tyler and start this. He started this Tyler Wood Recycling, borrowed money from his sweet mom for some equipment and bought this equipment and started a business, and in a couple of years did pretty well. And we moved to Tyler, Texas. We moved and became Orthodox, and I became Orthodox. I felt good because he was, you know, he had to go to confession. He had a priest, and I felt very, you know,
you're assuming he's telling the truth to the priest.
Exactly. Anyways, let's, but yeah, so we lived in Tyler, and then he tells me while I'm homeschooling, I need you to work. I said, so are we going to put the kids in school? No, I think if you work part-time, you can also teach them. By that time, I still had two in school, and I was forced to have to try to do both.
Divorce doesn't have to be complicated. Our Divorce.com's three-step procedure provides a simple and affordable process that you can follow at your own pace. Save thousands by visiting ourdivorce.com today.
All right, so you're working full-time, you're homeschooling your final two kids.
Yeah.
Jason he's
building
is
a business.
Building a wood recycling business.
Where, yeah, he picks up builder stuff. And did we recycle? He tried, but really it was saving some stuff and for the most part taking it to the dump. When all the whole 2020 COVID stuff hit, he decided to fold the business. Was doing really well. I know he was making over $100,000 a year, and the business was doing well. And I'm like, well, how are you going to do that? Well, I'm going to sell all the equipment, and we can live off of that. And then I'm going to get these PPP loans and not be very honest with them and put them into crypto. And so while I am working my ass off, he is sitting at home. And for a little bit, he tried to help homeschool, and then I ended up doing it because he didn't. And he sat on the computer all day talking to whoever I don't know or doing whatever I don't know. He stayed at home, and he started, he decided we were going to leave the church through all of this. Didn't like how they handled stuff, and dove into spirituality. And that's when things got really weird. I never in my life have been so confused.
So just so everybody's aware, so we're sitting here, it's May of 2022 when we're recording this, and we're talking that roughly 2 years ago, give or take, right?
Yeah.
That you're living in Tyler, Texas.
Yes.
He's shut down his seemingly somewhat successful business. Uh-huh. And is now using the proceeds from the sale of the equipment and some perhaps falsified PPE loans to trade crypto while you're working at a health food store.
Right.
And then we leave the church. We leave the Orthodox Church for spirituality, which I don't know what that means. So I'm sure other people don't either. So what happens there?
Well, and I'm probably going to, one of the things that I remember him telling me, and I could not wrap my mind around, was that God is the ocean and we are drops in the ocean. And so I'm like, well, what does that make me? And basically alluding that we are God. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm sure that there are people that have practice this spirituality, and it's very different from what he is saying. And they would say, no, he twisted that all up, and fine, whatever. But for me, I was very confused. One day, he's like, let's move to Oregon. Why don't we just sell everything? And we've got a year. We'll move out to Oregon. Let's go to Medford, where your brother lives, and sell everything. And we'll rent for a year, and if I have to, I'll get a job. And I was all for it. So in this last October of 2021, the house was sold and we headed out. Look, I'm overjoyed because I get to be with my family again, because Medford is about 4 hours from where my sister had lived and my parents. And so I knew, beautiful place, Medford, beautiful drive, I could go visit. So we get there. We get to Medford, Oregon. We have a place to rent, really nice home. I wasn't going to have to work. Said goodbye to all my friends, and I am back in my state.
Yeah.
Back, happy to be back.
You're up in Medford. Life is good for you.
Well,
you're thinking yes it's going to no. be good.
I was thinking it was going to be good. And so we get there, and my brother, Steve, comes over, and my sister-in-law, April, comes over. And right when she walked in the house, I had this weird feeling. Something's not right. And I can't explain it. It's just a weird feeling where when someone feels that way, you should listen to your intuition. I'm just going to tell you guys that now. I thought, something's not right. But I just kind of, okay, you know. And so we started hanging out with them. They helped us. She helped me rearrange my house. And, you know, it was really sweet. And they would come over. We'd go to the movies together. We went on a, my brother had, they had a fifth wheel, a big trailer. And he had a big diesel truck. And so they asked if we wanted to go to the coast. I said, okay. So we would stay in the fifth wheel in the back. It's really big. And we got there, and the whole time I'm driving in the truck, she's getting on my nerves because we're sitting in the back and she's telling me how spiritual she is. When I was little, I could see dead people, or I could move things with my eyes. I could move the lamp with my eyes and move the, she says I would practice. And she's saying this loud enough for Jason to hear. I'm like, okay. Everywhere we went, she never just walked with us. Like, we would go on a walk up the beach. We went to the coast and we were walking, and she would always wear the tight athletic pants, which I wear those, but it was a way. She was always 10 feet in front of me and in front of Jason. And I would get so annoyed because I'm like, just walk with us. But it was always up in front. I'm like, what is the deal? And my words were, why is she always hanging her ass out in front of me? That was my words.
Your family's up in Bend. Your parents and the rest of the family's up in Bend. Your brother's the only one down in Medford. Why Medford over Bend?
Well, Medford's a little cheaper to live, and these were my reasons why I thought it's a little cheaper, and you can grow anything there, you know. And my brother was there, and we were going to have a good relationship with them, and Jason was at odds with Charlie and at odds with my parents, and so my brother, for some reason, they always kind of got along.
Okay, so you're in Medford, and she's hanging her ass out on the coast
all the time, and it was cold. That's the thing, and so she would always end up taking off her coat because she had this big long sleeve tattoo, and she would just want to show it off, and she's tanning and all that, and hanging her ass out. I'm like, oh my gosh, we get up in the morning. I've got on a hooded sweatshirt and sweats, big old puffy socks, and she's again in a tank top, in those tiny little pants, hanging her ass out, showing her belly. And she's got goosebumps all the way up her arms. I know she's freezing.
Mm-hmm. Probably headlights too.
Oh, well, she doesn't really have boobs. So, I mean.
Really?
Flat. Yeah.
Huh. I don't know. Yeah. I just assumed, based on everything that I've heard about her, that she would have, like.
I'm sure that'll come, but he's not paying for that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. Skeeters. She's got little skeeter bites.
What is it that someone said about Gwyneth Paltrow? Like two eggs sliding down a wall?
I don't know if those are eggs. It's like maybe hummingbird eggs. I don't know. Anyways, So this is October. So you mind you, okay, from October to 2021. This is not very long. We did a lot. We went out. Let's fast forward. There is a hunting trip that her side of the family goes on every year. What a hunting trip. And
this is your sister-in-law's family.
My sister-in-law, April's family, goes on a big hunting trip every year. Well, Stephen looks forward to that every year. So he invited Jensen and Jason, but not me. Oddly enough, I'm like, okay, I haven't heard from her. Why does she not want me to go? I told Jason this. I said, she doesn't want me going. No, no, she's fine. I said, no, I've not been invited. And later I found out that, oh, well, Steve, Jill doesn't like it being dirty and da, 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 da. How does she know what I like?
Right.
Anyhow, so I wasn't invited. And I, by this time I'm getting these, I'm so annoyed. I've even called my sister and said, I'm trying to be nice, but something's not right. I said, Jen, the way she dresses is so provocative all the time. And it's not like if I were to dress like that, it wouldn't be provocative. It's the attitude behind it. It's this feeling, this vibe you get from her that she was putting out. It was incredible.
Overtly sexual.
Oh my gosh. It's like, are you wanting me to squeeze your buns? I mean, come on. I mean, are you putting it out for me? My gosh. So anyways,
maybe she was.
Well, you know, maybe she was. I need to give her a big old pop on her ass. But she was hanging it out and all the time. Well, I wasn't invited on this trip, okay? They left, I think, on a Monday. They were planning to be gone 7 days, and Jensen went with them. By Thursday, I woke up at 5 in the morning, and I instantly had this weird feeling. I'm worried. I'm concerned. And I text Jason. I'm like, I do not trust her. Something's not right here. It was just this long text of being concerned and going through things that have happened. And I get this text back that says, his nickname for me was Bean. Don't worry about it, Bean. Jensen's been with her the whole time. So through this whole thing, he hasn't said, I'm not interested. I don't care for her. She's your brother's wife. She's this, she's that, right? It's always just, don't worry about it. Jensen's staying with her. He's been with her this whole time.
I've got a babysitter.
Okay. Yeah, basically. Oddly enough, they end up the next day coming home early. And they come home like it's 6:30 in the morning. And I'm like, huh, didn't think anything of it. So that following week, my parents, for the first time, come see us. And I decide I might as well, because that next week was Thanksgiving, I might as well. So they went hunting November like 10th. Following week, they come to visit. And I think, why don't I just drive back with you guys? Jensen and I, we'll hang out, be Thanksgiving. Jason, you can bring Ella, who didn't want to come with us, and she'll come with you. Okay, so I'm there. So it's Thanksgiving Day, or not Thanksgiving Day, it's Thanksgiving. It was Wednesday, and he and Ella arrived. He was acting really weird, really weird. And so we all went out to eat. He acted weird, like just real standoffish from me. I didn't get it. I was like, what's wrong with you? I didn't think anything of it. I'm with my family, so I really don't care.
Right.
Act how you want. I'm with my family. And I'm sitting there, and he goes, I'm going to bed. I said, good night. And I'm waiting for him to come kiss me, and he just leaves. I said, oh, wow. Well, don't kiss me. Fine. So I finally go to bed, and I'm not sleeping well. And I normally am a good sleeper. And I heard him get up like at 3:30 in the morning. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I can't sleep. So we're out in the trailer at this point. My parents have a trailer, fifth wheel trailer. And I can hear him. It's all rocking. I can hear him walking at 3:30 in the morning over to my parents' house. I'm lying there. And right away, I can hear him coming back. And the lights are off. And he comes in and he opens the curtains. Bane, we need to talk. Flips on the light. And I said, it hit me. Boom. Just like that. I sat up. I said, what did you do? What did you do? He goes, well, I haven't done anything yet. And I said, what are you going to do? Well, I'm leaving you. I said, what?
I was just going to say the same thing. What?
and it's that same feeling. Okay. People would think, oh, you should have expected it. No, I stayed 12 years. We worked everything out and I put it behind me, right? This is just a bad chapter in this book of Jill's life, right? He cheated. So I trusted him. He goes, I'm leaving you for April.
Steve's wife.
And literally, Jill couldn't run at this point, right? Because we're in a trailer. So I kind of fell back on the bed. I'm like, falling back on the bed. Ugh. Because what do you do at that point? And I was like, wait. I said, wait a minute. He goes, I shouldn't tell you this, but we had a spiritual connection on the camping trip.
Two weeks earlier.
What? Yeah, 2 weeks earlier. I said, what? A spiritual connection? He goes, yeah. I had a spiritual connection. He says, we were playing Uno in their camp trailer and she was sitting across from me and I couldn't see her cards. He says, but as I was playing, I could see her cards. I could see the colors. No joke. I could see the colors and numbers. Colors and numbers that she was had.
So naturally, I should leave my wife.
Naturally, I should leave my two children that are, they're about to have babies or they're pregnant. My wife with five kids. So my mouth is so dry. I can't think. So here's what he says. We're going home. I said, we're what? I said, I'm not going home. He goes, okay, I'm leaving you. I'm going home. I said, no, let me get my stuff. See, I'm still thinking I'm going to work this out. So I said, I've got to get some water though. So literally I walk in the house and there's my mom and there's my dad. And I look at them and I'm crying, and I may get a little tear here, but my mom and I are not at all affectionate people, at least to one another. And I have never hugged my mom for so long and just bawled in her arms. And my dad took off. I mean, my dad like passed by me and took off while I'm just melting in my mom's arms. And my dad takes off. I'm like, where is he going? And my dad's 78 and tall and thin. And I run out there and he is in Jason's face going, you get off my property. I don't ever want to see you again. You will never do this to my daughter again. And I run over. I'm like, stop, stop. And Jason's like this, like he's going to hit my dad. I said, you're going to hit a 78-year-old man? My dad didn't have a weapon on him or anything. And I said, Dad, I'm going to go with Jason. He goes, no, you're not. I said, Dad, I'm going home. He goes, this is your home. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Good for him.
And I said, okay, Dad, I don't have shoes on. I said, Jason, take me for a drive, but you're bringing me back. So we went on a drive and he just told me he was leaving me. He says, you knew this was coming for years. I'm like, what? He left me for my brother's wife, April, and my brother and I have been freed. I know people say, it's a sad story, but for me, it's a story of freedom. I mean, for me, it's a story of being free from a man that had me like this most of my life.
Yeah.
Thumb on me.
As we were preparing for this, you told me that that you felt like it was your day of freedom.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know it's painful. I mean, there's no way it's not. But at the same time, it has to be freeing.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. More and more as I am coming out of this and realizing it's hard to tell this story, because when you realize you've been with a narcissist for so many years and he has controlled you, there's a lot of blank spots. Like, legitimately, when we would argue, if my apology, because I was the problem, wasn't the correct one, he would walk me through. He goes, I don't like your apology. If you would just say it like this, this, and this. And I'd say, okay, fine. And I'd say it like that. He goes, well, now you don't even have a heart. It's not heartfelt.
Oh, my hell.
So he would even walk me through apologies. You know, so I don't know if there was, I've been told there was a lot of interaction between April and Jason over the years that I didn't see. Well, there was a time when the kids were little and we were in Oregon, where April was walking away. They lived in Oregon as well. They lived in Bend before they moved to Medford. And my brother saw Jason look at her butt. She has a thing with her ass, apparently. And he swears he didn't. But in my mind, and it became a huge family ordeal between my brother and Jason eventually apologized and said, I really didn't look at it. Why would I do that? Blah, 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 which we know he did. Now, but in my mind, immediately I thought, what's wrong with me? Why does he have to look at her? So it's an internal thing where I started thinking, something's wrong with me. Something's wrong with me. And I didn't think how that would affect me eventually, you know, walking out the rest of my life, or not my life, but up until now, and realizing when that seed was planted. You know, I didn't care. Jen and I didn't care in high school. Yeah, I'm like, we were super in shape, but we were bigger. But it wasn't until after that incident where I started worrying about what I look like and the way my body looked.
Wow.
And then, yeah. And then, we've had some friends say that, came forward and said that, you know, we had Thanksgiving and he saw, as she walked by, I didn't even know this. This is probably around the same time that he actually grabbed her butt.
Grabbed April's butt?
Yeah. He told my brother that he kind of grabbed her butt when she walked by and no one saw. So, I mean, apparently this has been going on for years, and the thing is, people have asked me, have you forgiven him? I don't need to. I've forgotten him.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it.
I don't feel like I have to forgive him. It's not my job. It's not my job to forgive him.
Let's talk about the divorce here for a second, because you're not divorced yet.
No, I have been. I served him first. And then I was served three times after that.
Wow.
I don't, you know.
And so you're both already spending cash on this thing. Mm-hmm. The house is sold.
Yes.
And you already have the money for that.
Yes.
So what's left to fight over?
The crypto that he has. And he wants 60% of it and wants to give me 40.
Oh.
I'm like, you left me with, I gotta rebuild my life. I mean, at this point, I'm like, well, fine. I don't care.
Let's talk about the healing a little bit, because clearly at this point in the show, if you haven't figured it out, Jill is Steve's sister. If you haven't listened to the fuckening from a couple of weeks ago, now's a good time. But
and if you're on TikTok, he's at the Legit Mac.
Exactly.
So I am awake.46. So
yeah. Now, and by the way, that is a perfect lead into my question, because Steve's TikTok, the Legit Mac, is, I don't know if it started this way, but it blew up over him telling this story in little 1 to 3 minute snippets.
Right.
Then he was a guest on the show and we had a great conversation, and I consider Steve a very close friend at this point. And full disclosure, everybody, Steve somehow kind of helped Jill and I become acquainted, and we've become good friends over the last few weeks as we've prepared for the show, and I hope we stay good friends for a long time.
And, me too. But
the question I have, though, is your TikTok, he's using his TikTok as almost his own therapy, and that's the way he put it.
Right.
Yours is completely different. Your healing journey, your healing methodologies is just, they're polar opposites. So tell us how you're healing.
Well, I will tell you that the one person that has been there for me more than anyone is obviously my twin sister. Jen and I are, I don't know why I get so teary about it, but I didn't have her when I went through it the first time. And the second time, she has been with me nonstop. I mean, I have laughed like I've never laughed. So when I started this, seriously, when it happened, here's how my sister found out. After my mom found out and I was talking and holding my dad apart, my mom marched up, woke Jen up and said, "Jennifer, he's done it again." And Jen popped up. She popped up and was like, after she got her bearings, she popped up. And from that second on, she was like glue, literally slept with me the night, every night. She's like, I don't want you to be alone. And I was so thankful. I was so thankful, you know? And I'll say my niece who can hear me has been the second person, 17 years old, just like an angel, my roommate. And those two have been like a rock in my life. 17-year-old girl that's just, whoever she marries is married and freaking saint. But so Stephen said, everyone's asking about you on this TikTok. And I had a TikTok, but I just, I didn't know how to run it. I was just looking at the funnies.
Watching.
And I didn't even know what to do. And Stephen says, let me interview you. And if you guys go back to the interview, even the people were like, let her talk, but you don't understand. The comments were like, let your sister talk, but you don't understand. I could barely think. He had to ask me questions for me to even think clearly. There's just so much darkness in my mind. So the next video that we did was this duet. I said, don't they do those duets? Let me just do exactly what you do. Okay, Stephen, and I'll put that on mine. And it's 7 seconds of just getting up, me shaking my head just like him and just saying, he cheated on me. This is my brother. And I don't know how TikTok works, but I said, hey, we were at a friend's house. And I said, Stephen, is this normal for it to go this fast? I was looking, I said, 1,000 views. I said, now it has like 14,000 views. I said, oh, well, hold on. Wait, 20,000. I said, is this normal? I didn't know. He's like, no. So before you know it, it's got over 100,000 views. I'm like, wow. And I've got all these followers. Well, and I said, Jen, we have an audience and we are crazy as all get out. We'll do anything. And that's, I think the next video we did was the Costco video. And I said, no. We did one where we were talking and she was interviewing me. And I took that one down and I had 375,000 views on that one, but I felt like I gave Jason too much. Mm-hmm. And my TikTok was not going to be about any of him. I didn't want to give that to him. It's going to be my healing process of freaking laughter.
Good for
you. Because seriously, what you see on my TikTok is really me. It's really Jen. This is how we are. And Charlie will tell you, wherever we go, something funny is going to happen because I'm going to meet somebody. She's going to act stupid. I'm going to laugh at her. We're going to jump in a freezer and in Costco while my niece in a room right there is walks by videoing us in the Costco freezer. And she's acting like he's cut his dick off, you know, and that's what she's doing. People are like, oh, wait, that's what she's doing. You know, matter of fact, we've been invited back to that Costco over and over and they want us to do more videos.
Nice.
But yeah. So Jen has been, I mean, I was away from her for 16 years. Here's a womb mate. This is my womb mate, right? Yeah. My twin sister. And Charlie too, but Jen more than anyone, more than, sorry kids, but this is the one that has stood by me through absolutely everything. Prayed with me, helped me, counseled me, prayed for me, let me go out on dates with her and Charlie. Charlie's watched over me because the men have been a little bit aggressive and I don't know how to handle all that.
I've never met Charlie, never talked to Charlie. Yeah. But everything you've told me is he seems like just a great man.
He's outstanding. He's been very encouraging. He's like, Jill, you are top shelf. Top, how does he say?
Top shelf.
He says, you've got to understand this. Not just any guy deserves you. Not just any guy. Because he knows what I've put up with for all these years. And he knows... we're funny. I'm silly. I love people. I'm not perfect. And I don't say that I'm perfect. I could be a better person, I'm sure, in many areas of my life. And I plan to. I work on myself.
I think it's important that we put in here that so at the end of my interview with Steve, and Steve and I talked for a long time, like 3.5 hours. We had a long talk. And at the end of it, I think I'd turned off the recording and I said to him, I said, well, Steve, your sister is as much a victim. He had mentioned your names at some point during the interview, but I had, you know, it was so early on, I hadn't forgotten.
Sure. Yeah.
I said, so your sister is just as much a victim in this as you are. How is she doing? And, you know, and he said, oh, she's healing in her own way. We do things very differently, but she's doing well. And, you know, he told me all this. And I said to him, well, I would love to get her on the show to tell this exact same story, but from a completely different perspective. I mean, it's really not the same story until the last day, really. And I said, would you put me in touch with her? And he said, no. I won't. He said, but
hey, really?
He said, that's not my place. He said, wow. But I will ask her if she's willing to reach out to you, which I think is a really cool thing that he did. And I respect that a lot. And so just so everybody's aware, I did not know that Jill awake.46 on TikTok was Steve's sister. And I've been following her and Jen's antics for at least weeks, if not months, prior to my interview with Steve. And so it was, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, you commented on one of my videos and said, okay, I liked this one. I'm Steve's sister. And I'm like, what the hell?
I thought you knew me. I thought you were following us because of my brother.
And I wasn't. And I was following you guys because I love your content. And it's funny. And I laughed. And I will say this, and I've told you this, so I'm just telling this for everybody on the show. I watch these two ladies, Jill and Jen, and they remind me so much of me and my brother, Dave, that's why I watch, is because it reminds me of home. I feel at home watching you two do your thing. And I really, I love it. And I thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
So this is quite a story, and I'm sure, like we've both said, we could probably sit here for the next 10 hours and explore every little intricacy.
Oh, there's so many things that I haven't said, but I'm like, is that important?
Yeah, but let's get to the part where, what have you learned? Let's talk some advice. Where do we take it from here?
Well, I've thought about this, and I think for me, I would say that you are important. Don't ever put your children first. Don't ever put your husband first. And I don't say that in a selfish way, because some people are like, oh, you always have to put people first, people before you. But I think there's a way to do it that had I valued myself, valued who I was and my life as a person, and not just my life as a servant. I didn't marry that man to serve him. See, that's the difference. I married that man, and we should have been together in life, working together, right? When you marry someone, don't you ever, ever, man or woman, let someone speak to you and tell you who you are. You decide who you are. I know who I am now. But back then, he told me who I was, and he was wrong, and I believed it. And I think that to me is huge. Don't ever let somebody tell you who you are. If they're encouraging you and saying you're a lovely person, that's different. That's different. Let them love you. That's fine. But I put him up on a pedestal and never thought he would do what he did to me. And I thought he was this amazing person. And he crushed me over and over. And I'm a strong person, and I'm going to be an even stronger person as the more time that he is forgotten, the more time that I am away, I become stronger and stronger. I mean, I know that I will change lives, and I have changed lives. So I hope that answers your question.
It does.
Be you. Be you. Do not let people tell you. I mean, you can have people encourage you, but you decide who you are. Who are you? Whether you believe in God, which I do believe in God, whether I say I have to go to church or not, that's not for me to, don't have to go into that. But I know who I am. I know who God made me. I know who I believe in now. Whether or not I have to go to church or whatever, it doesn't matter. I know who I am.
Wow. Don't ever let somebody tell you who you are. That is a powerful message. When I first meet a potential guest for the show, I schedule a 15 or 20 minute call to make sure they have the right equipment and to hear, you know, a short version of their story. Sure, some of those meetings go a bit longer than they're scheduled, but for our first meeting, Jill and I spoke for over 3 hours. I mean, it felt like talking to an old friend. It was after that call that I sat down and made a TikTok video to remind people that just because someone is smiling, it doesn't mean they've had it easy. Jill is always smiling, but as you know, she hasn't had it easy. Total respect. I hope you liked that story. If you did, please take a few seconds to give us a 5-star rating on your podcast app. That really helps us spread the word. Also, be sure to follow Jill and Jen on TikTok at awake.46 and their brother Steve at TheLegitMac. They both have great content and they tell great stories. Have an amazing week, everyone. Bye.
It's a great day. I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile.